With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Kat Chow is the author of Seeing Ghosts. She is a writer and journalist and was a reporter at NPR, where she was a founding member of the Code Switch team. Her work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, and on Radiolab, among others. She's one of pop culture's Happy Hour's fourth chairs. She has received a residency fellowship from the Malay Colony and was an inaugural recipient of the Guy Day Up Fellowship at the Jack Jones Literary Arts Retreat. Welcome, Kat. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your beautiful memoir, Seeing Ghosts.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to talk with you.
Oh, you too. Would you mind letting listeners know a little bit about your book, and then I'll dive in and ask you my zillions of questions.
Yeah, Seeing Ghosts is a book about loss, and specifically the loss of my mother when I was 13 years old. And in it, I try to trace the ways my parents grieved and learned to grieve through the losses of their own parents, but also being immigrants from Hong Kong and China. And it's a lot about the inheritances that we have from family over generations, but also the idea of what we owe. So what we owe to ourselves, to our parents, to our cultures to some degree, and also to our ideas of home. And that's really what I was trying to answer and get at with Seeing Ghosts.
Wow. I mean, this is one of the best descriptions, like, of a person. The way you described your mom was so vivid and real. And the little details that you sprinkled throughout, like the little things that she did and her body when she's putting on her stockings and just like, no, I mean, I got such a sense the way she smiled with her teeth, like in her lips, like,
I can see
the whole thing, like the way the little things. Anyway, it was a vivid, like, elegy almost to
your mom, so. Thank you for saying that, because I think when writing about my mom, you know, when someone passes, they just become this kind of unknown entity. And I think that's one of the hardest things about loss, is that you no longer have access to this person. And in writing Seeing Ghosts, I was trying to keep my mom alive in this memory of her. And one of the things that I really wanted to try to do was recreate this image of her, and especially her body and the physicality of it, because that's one of the things that's lost in grief. And so as a writer, that was something that I was really trying to push myself toward.
So interesting. Well done. I mean, really great. I'm trying to, like, it's a great example of this, like, show don't tell. And even like my own, like, trying to write about stuff, like the little details, those are what makes a person in the end. That's what makes them into who they are. And that so easily forgotten. So anyway, I just love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you also have, like, little scenes. So I wanted to just read this, like, one thing you said. "Careful," you said, "as I eased the zipper away from your skin so it wouldn't catch. I smelled a whiff of the strawberry shampoo and conditioner you bought from Walmart, knocking a half dozen bottles into your cart whenever there was a sale." I mean, that's, like, such a perfect detail, right? Like, you know what shampoo, you're not just like, "My mom used this kind of shampoo." You're not even saying, "My mom was the type of woman who shopped at Walmart." And your use of the second person throughout the narrative, I also found was, like, super effective, that everything was, "You did this, you did this, you did this." How did you decide to do that?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I knew from the start that I wanted to merge this idea of my mother as a memory or as a ghost with a couple of different elements. One of them being this really macabre joke that she made about taxidermy when I was a young girl, because she knew I was afraid of dead things. And the joke basically was, before she even knew that she was terminally ill or sick, was, "When I pass, I want you to put me in your future apartment and have me stuffed." Yes. That's such a strange joke to retell.
I copied that whole thing. "When I die," you said, as you made that face, "I want you to get me stuffed so I can sit in your apartment and watch you all the time. This was the first and would be the only time that you would address your death with me."
So Zibby, one of the funniest parts of this, and then I'll answer your question, but one of the funniest parts of this, as I was writing this book, I was trying to tell this story to someone I didn't really know that well. And she got this really concerned look on her face and sort of shifted uncomfortably in her seat and was like, "Wait, do you have your mother in your apartment at home?" And I was embarrassed, but I thought that was so funny. And also, like, oh my gosh, could you imagine? So it's definitely a joke. And in the narrative of Seeing Ghosts itself, I try and use it as, well, I'll leave it to the reader to decide if these ghosts are imagined or if it's a metaphor or what, how real they are. But I love this idea of death and taking this fear of, you know, my mother and this joke she made. But also there's this idea in a lot of East Asian cultures, but also Chinese cultures that my own family prescribes to, which is the dead are meant to be appeased. Otherwise their spirits might be restless. And as a child, that is such a scary concept to hear about your own mother or relatives who have passed. And I wanted to merge all of that into a way to structure this book around this ghost who I address sporadically and very frequently.
Wow.
And so I loved that. And I'd always wanted to try and write this book this way. And it was only this attempt with Seeing Ghosts that I was really able to do it.
Wow. I have to say, as a mom of four, who, like, I worry about my death all the time, only in relation to, like, how much they'll miss me. I mean,
yeah. I mean, they would miss you so much.
You know, not to, you know, pat myself on the back, but yes, my kids would miss me a lot. And, like, I, you know, that's the part I worry about all the time. So then I was reading your book and I was like, huh, like, a stuffed version of me for their. And then I was sort of, my dad was involved for a little while with, you know, the wax museum. I can't remember what it's called, Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. So as a gift, they gave him a wax statue of himself. with one of his actual suits and ties and shirts.
Oh my gosh, no.
Yeah, like tailored in the same way. He always wears his pants a little too long, so he looks a little schlumpy in the bottom. And I shouldn't even say that. But anyway, and like his hair and his smile. And literally he has it in his house. And every time anyone walks by, it's like, ah! So freaky. And I'm like, I do not want to inherit that ever. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, not this thing.
I mean, but that's exactly the type of thing that I think would be really hard to throw out too. I mean, I think, yes. Yeah, you would donate it or put it somewhere else.
I would donate it somewhere, not in like, you know, the kitchen or something. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Over your kitchen table with orange juice, just waiting, yeah. Asking Zibby.
No, it's life size too. So it's not even like I could hide it somewhere. You also wrote about grief in general a lot. And you talked about, so sad, your brother's, you know, not stillborn, but he only lived a few hours, which is like the saddest thing imaginable at birth. And you wrote, this is the thing about grief. Despite how much we want to forget, how much we try to ignore, the dead are still here, waiting, watching. I try to commit the exact location of my mother's photo to memory. 1, 2, 3 down, 1, 2, 3, 4 over, when a temple employee flicks the lights on and off. Not exactly related to Jonathan's death. Anyway, tell me about grief in general.
I mean, so the part that you just read was actually this scene in this Buddhist temple in New York where my family has basically a shrine or memorial or something, photos to my mother and her parents. And visiting that for the first time as an adult was such a strange feeling because for many years, the way that my family had dealt with my mother's death, dealt in air quotes, was just to not really address her. And going to the cemetery, for example, was really painful. And this idea of having to face the dead was really crucial in terms of writing this, where you can't look away. And it's something that is an ongoing measure or an ongoing thing that you're always trying to challenge yourself to do. And I really thought that was an important thing to show, because in Seeing Ghosts, there's just such this giant theme of where remains might be with my dad and his search for his own father, or my brother Jonathan, who you mentioned, who died just a couple of hours after he was born. And I really thought it was important to play with the idea of the physical nature of grief, and how a lot of what was really important in my process of dealing with loss was figuring out ways to grieve in the absence of, a physical grave, or in the absence of being able to bring myself to the cemetery. And I mean, I keep thinking about this in terms of COVID too, just because we have all gone through so much loss in this past year. And one of my uncles, who I write about in this book, passed suddenly last April, and not being able to physically be there for his funeral because of safety reasons was so, so difficult. And it was painful, but being able to rely on my family's rituals that I have taken and adapted as my own as an adult was really beautiful. So I burned some incense, and I just think that it shows this ongoing nature of loss and grief, and how you learn to make ways for yourself to experience those things.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
System. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Yes, we had a lot of Zoom funerals during COVID, and it's the worst.
Yeah, it never gets easier.
No. Well, yeah. I'm really sorry for your loss and, you know, your mom, you know, all of it. Could we discuss your dad going to jail? That was like, that came out of nowhere in this.
Uh-huh.
I could not believe that part. You know, I know it's just such a minor thing in the midst of the greater scope, but the way you and your 2 sisters sort of rallied and, you know, also this whole pressure, both with paying his bail, but also the staggering healthcare costs of your mother's illness. And I feel like both your parents like felt so responsible is maybe the wrong word, but just felt so guilty that their tending to them was costing you all so much money, right? And the imposition it sort of placed on the family. So just tell me a little bit about that.
Exactly. I mean, so those 2 anecdotes that you mentioned, where my father and going to jail, and then also my mother and her deciding to take on less effective healthcare for money reasons. Those are 2 examples of how I really wanted to play with the idea of, at some point, a lot of people reach these ages where they realize that they are the ones who have to caretake for their parents. And I think for my father's story in general, that was one of the pivotal moments where my sisters and I realized that we had to come together as a unit and really assemble, as you mentioned. And one of the themes in Seeing Ghosts that I mentioned earlier is about the idea of what we owe and what our debts are. And also this idea of survival and the sacrifices that we make, or the sort of concepts that we adhere to in order to feel as though we can survive or be successful. And for my father, this was this concept of property ownership, which he learned from his mother in Hong Kong and in China. And for my mother, it was this idea of self-definition and also reaching toward, I think, a higher class, or sort of this idea of money or wealth as a way to prove to her father and other people that she had made it in America. And the difficult thing to grapple with as I was writing this was realizing that for my parents, these ideas of success or survival had not really been fully realized for a lot of different circumstances. My father's property ownership did not go as he'd imagined. And my mother and, you know, her successes financially did not go as she had imagined. And they all came at great expense. And that was something that was really hard to reckon with as a writer, and also in my own lived experiences as a daughter too.
So how do you approach life differently, knowing sort of all this? Like, I feel like people who have gone through grief and loss, like there's something intangible that sort of shifts, like the view just like crystallizes or something. Like, do you feel that because of your loss, like some things are just obvious to you that might not be to other people? Or do you live your life a little bit differently?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
I think that, no, it's really provocative because, I mean, I would like to say that I do live my life differently. I feel like that's something that I would aspire to, but in the moments and day to day, I can still feel and experience the grief of you know, my uncle's passing, my mother's passing, other people's passing, just so much. But I think one of the things that I strive to always remind myself is how grief can be really protracted. It can stretch over time, but also to try and remember the loss of someone on this big picture way, where they're not just their death, they're the moments that made up their life, and trying to ground myself in those memories of, you know, the little idiosyncrasies that made up my mom, and the teeth base, for example, or the speech patterns that she would fall into. Those are the things that I found really important to preserve. So even right now, I notice myself, I think it's probably a response to COVID and just being so afraid of the uncertainty, sort of like what you mentioned with your kids. I find myself trying to be more intentional about my relationship with people and the things I remember and I'm grateful for. So with my dad, we have a complicated relationship, of course, but I try to remember his sense of humor and as subtle as it is. And I try to find, you know, compassion and empathy in the way that he can be so stubborn, and also me too, and how I learn these things from him. And with my sisters too, and my husband CJ, and everything. And so going through so much loss at a young age taught me how to see things kind of big picture. But as an adult, it taught me how to sort of zoom in on the tiny details.
Love that. Yeah, I think that's one thing I feel like I've learned more in COVID is like zooming in, like focusing on today. And so far, I'm like, I feel like it's kind of like a hack, you know, like, right? But it's working, right? It's like mitigating my anxiety in the short term. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll just like go with this and, you know.
Yeah, it helps you not doom scroll for hours.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but you know. So are you working on anything else now, or like, what are you up to? What's your day-to-day like and all that?
My day-to-day is really just a mix of getting ready for this book launch and hopefully working on some other projects in the works that I'm not ready to talk about. But in the future, I'd love to write more books. I'm a reporter and journalist by nature, and I'm so excited to have the mind space to get back into reporting. And I think one thing that I'm really looking forward to is seeing what happens now. And when you focus for so many years on a project like Seeing Ghosts, it takes everything from you, or at least it did for me. And I'm looking forward to reacquainting myself with the world as someone who is not writing this book.
How long was it, like start to finish?
I sold the book in 2018, so since then, but really I'd been working on it for so many years earlier. I'd say between 8 to 10 years, I had this idea in my head, and it just was, you know, it's just something that I've always wanted to do. So,
well, how great.
I'm glad. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad that it's coming out.
Yeah, this is amazing. Wow. What advice would you have for aspiring authors?
One thing that a very good friend, Maria Karimji, told me when I started writing Seeing Ghosts was writing a book is a series of trust falls. And I loved that idea so much because there are so many opportunities for you to be afraid. But having trust in yourself in the process of being a creative person or a writer is so important. But also having trust in the people around you who, whether they're friends or an editor or, you know, your publisher, that's also just as important too, because publishing can be such a machine, and also writing an entire book is really hard. But having faith that you can ultimately do it and that you will be satisfied because it is yours is really crucial.
Very true. Amazing. If you could just name one thing you miss the most about your mom, what is it?
Oh, I miss her hugs.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, just that's all. I mean, tear up a little. That's a really nice question, because I think that's one of the things you can't get back is physical touch. Oh. So, but I think that's really, it's a lovely image. So thank you for that.
Oh. I'm sorry to make you at the very end.
No, it's nice to think about these things too, because I think it's just a reminder of what's not there, but also everything that we still have with the people who are still present.
Okay. Well, Kat, thank you for this talk. And I'm really excited for you and so rooting for you with the book launch. So good luck. And, you know, thank you for chatting today.
Thank you, Zibby. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books.
Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.